Hello, friends, and welcome to this, the 43rd episode of All New Snap Judgments. My name is Roy Rogers, and joining me this and every week is my friend and yours, Aaron Glazer, fresh off of his beautiful island vacation. How was the DR, my friend?
Had a great old time. Feeling refreshed, making way too much content since I got home. Things are going well.
All right. So Glazer went from relaxation to one of his manic phases. So we are living good here in content land then. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that your vacation went well and that you enjoyed yourself. Glazer, who is our special guest this week? Very special guest.
Oh, our intros still think you're Gunny from the episode that we lost last week. Sorry, it's Roy, not Gunny. For anyone seeing the visual, it'll be changed in the show notes. We are joined by the one and only Fa Thor Newman, one of my favorite people in this whole game. It is a three-teacher episode, so get ready to get your learn on.
Hello.
How you doing today, Newman?
I'm doing great. I'm excited. This is fun. It's been a while. You'd like me to tell everyone about myself if I'm reading things well?
Yes, please.
You know how to do things.
The best thing to do here is to share your whatever they're calling Twitter now.
Yeah.
Insta, YouTube, TikTok.
No.
Do you have a TikTok? Good.
No, that's not for me. I'm Fa Thor Newman, F-A-T-H-O-R, and then Newman. You could find me on YouTube. I'm on X/Twitter, and I also stream on Saturday mornings bright and early, starting at 7 Mountain Standard Time. So, yeah.
Cool. Also, go follow him, please. Like, stop listening to us. Go follow him. You won't regret it. Oh, the cat just jumped at me. Sorry. Go ahead, Roy.
No, I said I agree, Aaron. You should definitely go out there and follow Thor Newman. Just in case you want to go out there in internet lands and follow us, our X/Twitter/whatever Elon Musk is calling it in between his white supremacist tweets is at SnapJudgeCast. We are unbelievably proud to be the official podcasting partner of Marvel Snap Zone. And you should go out and join their Discord, which is the best large Discord in all of Marvel Snap. You can find the link to that in our show notes, in the description of this episode in the YouTube, or the description of the episode in your friendly neighborhood podcatcher. Everywhere you find Snap Judgments, you find a link to this Discord, which you should join because it's awesome. Support Marvel Snap Zone because you are supporting many of our friends and Aaron for and the content they create and being the best damn website for Marvel Snap. If you want to email us your disgruntledness with this introduction, please do so at snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. I do not check that email, but Aaron does. And you can make his life more difficult. All right. And last but not least is the very place that if you are watching the video, you found Snap Judgments on our YouTube channel each and every day, 6 out of 7 days a week. Glazer, or when Aaron's on vacation, his friends in the community produce a new video. Glazer, if our loyal listeners were to become our loyal viewers and follow us at Snap Judgments Pod on the YouTube, what would they find right now?
So Snap Judgments League is wrapping up. We've got a bunch of single game playoffs from undefeated people. That'll be next week's tournaments. We have some of the final wins from this week that'll be going live, I believe, the same day as this does. And Monday, depending, that could be today, depending on when this gets done. Monday is going to be, I've got some more exclusive Italian tournament decks. They have this round robin tournament where like their top 8 players in the country are just sort of beating the hell out of each other and playing their best stuff, their secret stuff. And then after they play it, they send it to me. So I will be covering that on Monday.
That's really exciting. I'm glad you mentioned the Snap Judgment League, because that brings us to the last bit of sort of social media / ways to support us, which is, of course, the Patreon. The Patreon is very different than other Patreons, because while some may be accused, and Patreons may be accused of being a pyramid scheme, This is a reverse pyramid scheme where money flows from us to you, our loyal listeners and loyal viewers. And the Patreon just makes it easier for us to, well, by us, I really mean Aaron, although I do pay for a lot of the behind the scenes stuff here.
You do. I keep offering you money for it.
But anyway, it is, we are in the red, and you can help us continue to be in the red by supporting us on Patreon, which is, of course, patreon.com/snapjudgments. Later this weekend, Glazer and I will be making content for the Patreons exclusively. Ooh. And lots of other amazing stuff that's on there. You get early videos. You get access to this next season of the Snap Judgments League. You get access to some of Gunny T's sort of pop-up tournaments. There's lots of really great stuff that you get access to through the Patreon. And, of course, you support Aaron and the 24/7, 365 grind set culture that he has, even when he's on vacation.
War Machine time.
All right. War Machine, everyone's favorite best friend of Tony Stark, is a Series 5 6K tokens. All right. What will War Machine get you for your 6K tokens? You get a 4/6 with the text. On reveal, until the end of next turn, nothing can stop you from playing cards anywhere. You may recognize this a version of this text from Jeff, the cutest card in Marvel Snap. Newman, what do you think of this card?
I love it. I know one of the questions that's coming up is about War Machine and Sandman. I have had so much fun with War Machine this week. I don't know if it's just because it's new, but I think I've tried out three separate decks and all of them work totally fine. Heard someone describe them as like the wall decks, where you just throw down Infinaut on turn six or whatever. It's just, it's so much fun. It's just enjoyable. I have had no one play it against me while I'm playing Sandman. So I don't really know what that experience is like, but I've played Sandman with War Machine and man, it's really annoying. So I'm a huge fan.
I am whelmed. I think it's a good card. I think in a fairer version of Marvel Snap, this would be the best card in the game. Where, like, before we had, like, Destroy really consistent going super huge, Thanos really consistent going super huge, Tribunal crap. Like, the discard has sort of shot through the roof in power. In a previous version of Marvel Snap, this would be the very best card in the game. We are not in that version of Marvel Snap. This is just a good card. It is a useful and good card, but it's worth noting that we thought it would kill Lockdown. Instead, Storm and Professor X are more prevalent than ever because, they make you have it and they make you use your War Machine in a very specific way that doesn't let you use it offensively. I have played it against Sandman and it felt real good. They retreated. I snapped. Like, I didn't know they were going to Sandman. They played Sandman on 5 fairly and I was like, War Machine on 5. And they were like, bye. I was just like, I'm just slamming Infinite, guys. Like, we're fine. Nothing bad's going to happen to you here, but I did win that game. I think he's a good card. Like, I think he's more fun than he was given credit for, too, which is nice.
I want to add really quick. Sorry to jump in. I had this big goal this week of throwing Galactus into a Professor X lane and like destroying their, like, oh, I've got one power here, but you can't play cards. Ha ha ha. It hasn't worked. I've gotten really close. But I'm so excited just to make that happen someday. That's one of the biggest draws is that it kind of was supposed to ruin Lockdown stuff. Maybe someday.
Whoops.
Yeah. So for me, I think these are the ideal good stuff cards. I think I've said this in previous episodes because not only does it make sort of like mid-range decks more consistent and have more answers, it also like smooths out play experiences that people don't necessarily like. Which, while it may not have killed Lockdown, it creates like the illusion for people they can like put War Machine in their deck and they feel better about playing Marvel Snap and they feel better about playing their deck. It smooths out the edges of decks that had trouble keeping up with some of the more consistent decks like Thanos or Destroy and to a lesser extent Tribunal combo, like Black Knight decks, right? Which sometimes ended up with a bunch of like really clunky cards it couldn't play in its hand, and War Machine solves that problem and makes that deck more competitive and more consistent in this higher power level. I mean, I think Glazer is right that essentially like this would have been the best card in Marvel Snap in a fairer game, But I actually think he's underselling how much this smooths the edges of the meta. And in a really healthy way. This is like, I think, a fundamentally healthy card on every single axis. Like, I think War Machine is just a good card, feels a good card to play, right? And there's like lots of just like banal examples, like where Space Throne and Doctor Strange's Sanctorum, like you live in that hell world where two of the three locations are, you know, very unplayable. And this allows you to have a turn where you're playing cards, right? And that sort of makes all players of all skill levels feel good. And I'm really glad that they put it on one of my favorite Marvel characters as well, right? So I think this is like a huge... I know some people said that this isn't like a good design for War Machine thematically. You can definitely, I think, seeing him like coming in, making sure people can like land where they're supposed to, like you can come up with like a theme for this card. But I think putting a powerful effect on like a well-known Marvel character, I always like when you see that. I love the Iron Man characters, so I'm happy. But the TLDR is I'm happy with this card on every single axis, and it is definitely a card that I recommend people get simply because you will have fun playing War Machine. And fundamentally, that's what Marvel Snap is about. And of course, like as strategies move, War Machine could consistently just be a card you put in your deck. The final point, I guess, would be about Lockdown. So while I don't think this has killed Lockdown, it's forced, I think, the Lockdown players to be better. And because I think good Lockdown players can beat War Machine. But I think it's definitely made people change their play patterns with that deck. And that, again, is a good thing, right? So even if it didn't entirely remove a playstyle that a lot of people don't like, it still changed it and gave people an easily accessible, well, as much as any 6K Joker card is easily accessible, a straightforward would be a better word. Straightforward answer to Lockdown that like anyone who owns this card who's just been playing against Lockdown nonstop in the ladder can play this and feel like they have an answer. And Lockdown players have to respect it. They have to change their play pattern. And that's going to cause them to lose more games to people who don't have War Machine because they're playing around War Machine, which leaves them open to other play lines. And that, I think, is extremely healthy in a card game, which is that an archetype that people are annoyed with gets sort of shifted around, gets new vulnerabilities, and doesn't go away, but has to adapt and change. So again, I think of all of the recently released cards, War Machine's been the healthiest.
Yeah, all that.
All right.
I actually like Cannonball better, but other than that, I agree.
That's fair. But I didn't say it was the best. I said it was the healthiest. So
no, I think Cannonball is very healthy too. I think Cannonball does something interesting.
It says interesting, but I don't think any. Well, anyway, we could. I don't know.
I think it's two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Oh, the high 10 questions for our friends from our friends. All right, we got lots of different questions. We got general Snap questions. We got Snap theory questions. We got work life questions, and we have some fun questions. So we have a lot of questions to answer in this sort of Q&A episode. So let's start, and I'll throw this to you, Newman. Thoughts on War Machine disrupting Sandman? I know we've talked a little bit about that so far, so we might not need to spend a lot of time on it, but sort of thoughts about the Sandman versus War Machine.
Yeah, this is a bad weekend to play like pure Sandman because other people are just going to run War Machine. But I think in general, it feels like it kind of made it better because then you also have other things that you can do on turn six other than just freaking dropping Doom or something like that. I feel like it complements it in a very strange way. But if you as a Sandman player don't have it and your opponent does, yeah, you did nothing. So I think it's fine. Everything's okay. Didn't disrupt it too much yet, because I'll just run it too.
Yeah, I more or less agree with that. I think that, look, a lot of what War Machine decks do is they want to slam War Machine and play a big thing, and that doesn't really disrupt Sandman. That doesn't really affect Sandman in any way, shape, or form, right? Like, Sandman doesn't change because, like, you play Infinaut on turn six, right? Like, Sandman's going to do the Sandman thing anyway. So, like, I'm not, like, there's no War Machine deck. I don't think there exists a War Machine deck that's, like, even theory-crafted that's, like, play War Machine, drop five cards. And, like, as long as that doesn't exist, Sandman isn't affected.
Yeah, I mean, the future, who knows? There could be some deck that does that, but I think it's too different. The four cost makes it too difficult to pair with something that reduces. Like, I mean, you would need like Zabu and like, but then it doesn't go well with black. Like, you can't play this in Black Swan, maybe, right? Because under Sandman. So there's like not really anything to do that. I just think it gives some counterplay. And again, I think, again, what I want to say is like War Machine creates the illusion you have agency. Right. And it gives makes players feel good and makes them hate Sandman less. Right. Which should be good for people who want to play Sandman, because the more the less people hate that deck, the less likely Second Dinner is to do anything about it. Right. Because Second Dinner has clearly shown that they like complaints first. Right. And so I think that's just generally healthy. And again, like, I've enjoyed some Sandman in my time, and I'm happy that people have an answer to it. I'm happy that I have an answer to it when I get frustrated. And that it forces both Sandman and War Machine players to like think creatively. Like, so I think, again, War Machine is a really great counter card to the things it counters, because it's not just like, now you can't do your thing ever. You have to think about like what you, how your thing changes, and what the fact that I have a one turn answer to your thing does for the game. And that, I think, is a really, really interesting place to be, versus like even Shang-Chi, which just blows up your thing and you can't do it. Right, Sandman can still disrupt for, instead of two turns, it disrupts for one turn, which is a, can be a big tempo game, right? Like, if a Sandman player is ahead early, and then they play Sandman, and you play War Machine, War Machine's not an really overstated card, right? So like, there's like lots of interesting things that playlines to Sandman still has, and then the War Machine player has to figure out like, maybe Infinite, as Glazer said, isn't good enough. So again, I don't think War Machine kills Sandman at all.
All right. Question two is, and we'll start with Newman. How would you balance Thanos?
I feel unqualified to answer a lot of questions in this thing. This is one of those. I think the main
bad answer. It's fine.
Yeah, no, it's all good. I think the main things I've thought through is like, okay, you nerf his power, but that doesn't really do that much. You nerf stones, and they've tried that, and that has helped some. But I think it's going to be continued messing with the stones. I don't think if you remove this card or this stone draws a card, that's just going to ruin the deck, and it's never going to work ever again. Because then you're going to end up with what, 6-7 cards that you never see during the course of the game. So that's not a fair answer. I think it's just changing up the stones to do something less powerful. And I mean, but it's all the other cards too that are like a problem. So I don't know, make Thanos a 6-0 so no one ever plays, and make the Power Stone a 1-0 and it just adds one power to everything else, and make other things draw stuff. Like, I don't know, just try better. A bunch of, yeah, I have no idea. But then you don't ever see Thanos as a 6-20 either. I don't know. I don't ever really play Thanos when I like play him. It's usually all the other cards. So more qualified people, go.
Well, my answer, I've said this before, I'm going to keep saying it and hope that Second Dinner hears me, is make it so Thanos must be played the turn he's able to. The first turn Thanos is able to be played, you should have to play your Thanos. I think that basically solves most of the issue. As long as you have to play Thanos, then he's still great, right? But like, now on either turn 5 or turn 6, you're like wasting a turn playing a 6-10 that's fairly easily counterable. And I think that more or less like pushes it in line. It makes it hard enough to play that it gets pushed down. That's what I would do, right?
I actually think Newman was right. If you really want Thanos to be distinct but never be a problem, a generic problem again, is you do change the stones fundamentally. Like, you make them utility cards that don't draw a card, but maybe cost 2. They've already shown they can willing to do that. Or 3, it's you play Thanos, you get access to these power stones, which are these generically useful cards, but the cost that you play is that your deck is expanded, and the sort of advantage of Marvel Snap, which is that you see many more cards than you do in most card games, goes away, right? Instead of this like tool to both utility plus deck churn, the sort of cantrip, to use the technical term within sort of card games, that a lot of the stones do, although increasingly less of them, is like, that's the fundamental problem with Thanos, particularly since Blob has been printed. And I think that sort of changing them up to make them 2-3-1 cost and not draw a card, but is, I think, the best way to do it, so that people who are interested in the utility have to pay this harder cost to it than they do right now. So sort of that would be sort of my solution. And it seems to be with Second Dinner's willingness to like fundamentally break the like heart of the card that has existed since Thanos was put in the game, which is to make a stone cost two, that might signal that they're willing to experiment more with that. I mean, we'll see. Like, Thanos is going to be a perennial problem because it's just so good at powering generic mid-range good stuff that it's just going to constantly be worked on and just constantly cause headaches for Second Dinner. It's probably, to be completely honest, the most design constraining card in Marvel Snap, has been shown over and over again. So we'll see like what they do. But I think if you're a Thanos player, I think you should constantly expect your deck to be changed from the top by Second Dinner, and you just have to come to terms with that. If you were an early Thanos player, you gotten plenty of value for your tokens, slash, I don't know, however you acquired the card, opening it randomly like I did. But I think you should just be prepared for there to be constant adjustment, because every card that they print could go in Thanos. We joked about this, Glazer. I don't know, is it the end of the year one where it was like, mm-hmm. how do you print cards that don't go to Snap, don't go in Thanos? It's like, just don't print Marvel Snap cards. Like, I think that that is going to continue to be a problem until they fundamentally redesign Thanos, which is sad because, again, I think fundamentally Thanos is one of the most thematically designed cards that they've ever done. But we're paying, there's a high cost for it. And I think that there's going to be a time when they're just tired of paying that cost and they're going to really rework the card. All right. So what would you add as far as background border effects be? I have literally no opinion about this, so I'm going to throw it to Newman as a guest and see if Glazer has opinions. He's become a cosmetic guy since he started making a full-time content creator, so I'm interested to see his answer. But Newman, what is your take?
All right, this is outside the box a little bit, and I literally couldn't think of anything else, but I would love to have like thought bubbles or speech bubbles where I could like say, like, this is what my card says. And I throw it down, and if it's like Sandman, it says, I'm sorry. I wouldn't go to BM, you know, but like, sorry for ruining the game or something like that. Just so they are aware. But then you could put swear words in there and like that, you know, I don't know. So it needs some fleshing out, but I like the idea quite a bit.
So I want something to amplify like the backgrounds of cards, like the actual background on the original designed art, that it goes away like for basically every background, I think is less than ideal. I'd like something that like, instead of giving you a new background, like a gold background, a foil background, a black and white, instead like sort of lets you click on the card and like expands the background, the original background, and makes it like 3D-ish.
Very cool.
I like that.
Thank you.
All right. All right, you got the name is in your handle here, Newman. Is the Thor package underrated?
Yes, and I was really excited when beta rate built.
Overrated, excuse me.
No, it's underrated. It's rated as well, but I was pretty bummed out because I never really played Thor a ton before beta rate built, and I was like, this is going to make this so much more fun. It slows everything down. It clogs up the deck to find Mjolnir, and I'm pretty annoyed if I actually draw Mjolnir before I use Jane Foster. Like, I feel like it just could do something better. I like the idea behind it. I just don't love that it kind of ruins my play. Like, if you make it so that you draw Mjolnir on six all the time, or you get it plus another card on six, I don't know. That'd probably be pretty freaking busted, and then why do you need Jane Foster? But something else that it doesn't ruin draws for the next few turns, or add the possibility of ruining draws. But it's the same with Beta Ray Bill. Thought that card was really cool, but it just, I don't know. I could never win games consistently because I either drew it and then didn't draw something else that would have helped out or something like that. So that's my opinion.
I think it's really good. My big problem is that you sort of need Jane on five. And it's a nightmare. Like, Jane on six does nothing, right? And Jane on four isn't playable. So, like, you need Jane on exactly turn five. And, like, there's very few cards that you need on exactly turn five, right? Like, it's basically, I think, Jane and Sarah are the important ones here. Professor X, but you can throw him on turn four. Same thing for Doc Ock. Annihilus is fine on turn 6, etc. So, like, that you need Jayne on 5 for these cards to not be shit is kind of a problem, right? Like, mm-hmm. If you don't draw Jayne, and you made less likely for you to draw Jayne by playing these freaking cards, then all of a sudden your deck is worse, right? Like, mm-hmm. your deck doesn't work. You've just played 2 below rate cards or 1 below rate card, and it's worse. I don't know what the fix to that is. I wouldn't hate the hammers getting a draw effect attached to them.
You mean when they draw a card when you play them, like the stones? Or yeah. Like you draw a second like card when you...
Draw a card, you play a hammer, draw a card. So basically, if you top deck a hammer, you're not dead, right? Although if you top deck it on 6, you still have the exact same problem you did before. So if you top deck it on 4 or 5, you get an extra draw. And if you use Jayne, then you don't get any extra benefit. I think that would really like push it, but I don't think it would push it too far because it's just frustrating enough to get going. And there's not really ways to cheat it out outside of Jayne. So like you can't use it as like a draw abuse engine. Maybe you start throwing magic in there, right? Like to try and get the extra turn so you can take advantage. But like now you're doing a whole bunch of combo stuff. And I think that like it just gets more interesting that way. And I'm like, I mean, the downside here is literally the existence of Lockjaw, even as a 4 cost. So with that one exception, because Lockjaw breaks everything. And look, Lockjaw as a 4/5 is eventually going to be broken. Just mentally prepare yourself. But with the exception of Lockjaw, I think that would go a long way toward pushing it. Because again, like I think it's really good, but I think it's the worst of the major packages, that being like Darkhawk and Annihilus, that I consider just like slamming into a deck because of its restrictiveness on turn 5.
It's definitely the most telegraphed play pattern, right? Because mm-hmm. you have to play 2 clunky cards, 3, 4, and actually 3 clunky cards in a row, right? If you're playing Zabu, right? So maybe you play Beta Ray Bill on 4, right? Or on 3 and Thor on 4, whatever. Like, and then you got to play Jayne on 5, right? Mm-hmm. And all of those cards, like, it's hard to, like, come up with a good plan, right? With that, because you don't necessarily know what your opponent's plans are. So you need to be proactive. But some of the most critical turns in the game, you're giving up, right? So mm-hmm. you need a huge 6 as well. Not only the 2 hammers, but you also need a good 6 draw, right? Or a good play on 6, right? That sort of like ties it all together. And there isn't Super One. There's like
Odin,
Dr. Doom, Odin.
No, it's Odin. Right. So you double the effects of
right,
the hammers.
No, I understand.
It's,
but like, that's like, but then games where you don't draw Jayne, Odin becomes even worse. Like, it's just like awkward and asks a lot of you for something that like is powerful, but it's like, that powerful. So, and any effect that like puts, it's the reason why Thor was like Thor's golden age, right, was during the golden age of Lockjaw, right, where Lockjaw was unlimited and the mm-hmm. zero drop was like your dream. It's like there was no downside to trying the zero, right? And so you just dumped it in your Lockjaw lane and you got something, right? Sometimes you got Jayne and then you drew it and you could do it again, right? And all of like that shows you just like how much of a drawback adding those cards to your own deck. These clunks are your own. And I think Glazer might be right in the sense, like, what if the hammer said, like, what if Mjolnir said, draw Jayne Foster, right? Like, you just, mm-hmm. like, when you play it, just draw Jayne. Like, that might even be something you have to do. So that way it can never become a generic, like, just drawing cards card. Like, that's really wild. But anyway, I don't know. I don't think the Thor package can ever become busted without a fundamental change to how it works, which might just be healthy. Like, do you want the Thor, like the Thor package to go crazy? I mean, maybe you do. Like, I think
for a while.
Yeah, right? But that's because of Lockjaw, not because anything about, right? Like, it's because
no, you said, do I want it to go crazy? Oh, yes, do you for a little that? While. I think for a little while, like, it being the meta thing to do, like, not forever. I don't want anything to be meta forever. So, like, I think for a little while, it being the meta thing would be fun.
Yeah, I just, the problem with, like Thor and Beta Ray Bill are, like, just 2 of the coolest, most, like, thematically designed cards, right? Like, Mjolnir, mm-hmm. You play Mjolnir, and you do something cool, and Thor becomes more powerful. Right, you play Stormbringer and you get something like really cool with with Beta Ray Bill, right? Like, I don't want that to go away. And the more you meddle with that, the more you mean second gen have to change something fundamentally about the card that will take away the like really cool experience of feeling like you're playing like with Thor. His hammer makes him better, right? And if you start, pardon my French, fucking with the hammer, like you're gonna like bait second dinner into doing more changes, right? Like, I think leave this like fun, slightly underpowered package alone. Like leave Odin's son alone and his friends alone. And like let the Thor fans do it.
What if you here we go. What if you made it, because Thor says Mjolnir to me, right? What if it just M'Baku'd out of the deck, like at the end, and it just goes to a random place? Like, I feel like that would make sense for the card and, you know, the words that are said too.
It would, it's that's ridiculous. Insanely strong.
I know, but I really like that idea a lot. So, you know,
I mean,
it's a bad idea, but I like it.
If it only came out of the deck and not your hand, I don't know. Or maybe it's just a zero cost card comes out.
Ooh. Yeah, that'd be fun. I don't know. I think that's probably too good. Yeah,
it's busted, zero but card. I like the idea.
It's busted, yeah.
It's I mean, cool. It's very thematic.
Yeah, I think it works with Thor, but like not Beta Ray. I think because Thor himself is not that problematic. It's like Beta Ray 2.
You can also just like lower their cost, right? Mm-hmm. You can make Thor like a 2/2 that becomes a 2/8. Beta Ray like a 4/4 that becomes a 4/10 that could then be a 4/20, right? Like that, and then you make Jaina like 4/6. Like that would do a reasonable job of solving things too.
Yeah. You kick everything down.
And I don't think that breaks anything either. Like it's more likely to, but like I don't think it does.
Yeah. No, I mean that's not entirely wrong either. Just play with the costs. Or again, it's okay for cards to be mid. I know Marvel.
Yes, snapped, but it's Thor.
I know, but there's lots of characters that are mid. Like it, like because Thor is still a series. Is he a series 3 or series 2 card?
He is series 3.
Is he okay?
Because I didn't have him when I needed him at some point for something.
I remember getting him pretty early, but like it does again. So maybe since he's a series 3 card, he's worth like being. But like again, I think. Not all the best characters in Marvel. The coolest Marvel cards either need to be like teaching cards that like you're excited to get early, like Captain America is, and can push you through like playing Captain America in my deck while you're learning Marvel Snap, or they need to be compelling cards. And like they can't all be both. And so some cards are gonna be like Cap and Punisher and relegated, to you know. Series 2 life style. And that just has to happen. Like, you have to have experiences early in the game, and the cards have to change, right? And so...
Yeah. Thor just isn't early in the game.
Yeah. But, so, since he's not, maybe he's worth redesigning then, but...
All right. What's the long overdue UI update that you want most?
I got this. It's very selfish of me. I play on Mac and I play on iPhone, and I don't have a deck tracker for Conquest. And so having one of those that's built in, it'd look probably clunky as crap. It wouldn't be amazing, but just having the ability to be like, oh, it, like my ADD goes crazy, like just then. And I forget what they're playing, or I missed like, oh, did this come from their deck, or was it a Coulson card? So just having the ability to actually track that from mobile and from Mac would be really nice. Please and thank you.
You can track that last one. Click the card. It'll say where it came from.
Right. But if I'm like four games in the future, okay. I won't remember oh, crap. Are they really running Echo in this deck? I don't know.
Gotcha. I mean, you could just be a good person and get an Android. But the other choice is I just want more decks already.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think we've hit a point in the game where, like, just give me more decks. You're being ridiculous by insisting it remains 20. It would take them no work, and it would make everyone, like, I mean, not no work, but minimal work while making the player base extraordinarily happy. And, like, that's just pure upside for them, so stop being schmucks about it and give us, like, more decks. If I had 30 decks, I'd be happier. I'm constantly like, oh, do I want to delete this deck? I may want to play this. Do I want to delete? And, like, I have all my decks saved in various places, but it's stupid. Just give me more decks in your game.
I have two. Glazers is really good. Like, I think, I'm sure there's some like database problem that if you made like 40 or 50 decks, it would, I don't know, make the game crash because it's too much memory or something because they programmed it poorly early on in design or whatever, because that always tends to be what the problem is. For me, it is, someone was whining on Twitter / X or whatever we want to call it, the cesspit, about like the fact that the, like, when you boot up the game, it doesn't change seasonally. Hmm. Like, I'm like, yeah, you know what? That would be cool. Like, I mean, like, I like the initial, like, Marvel Snap logo version of it, but it'd be cool if, like, it was Avengers versus X-Men 1, and next year, like, definitely they thought Captain America 4 was coming out this month, season that we're going to be getting. And, you know, like, if that changed every month, I think that would be, like, really cool and make booting up the app and be like, oh, the season changed, right? Like, to newer player, like, or somebody who's taking a break. So I think that's really cool. I think the other one for me is, why in God's name did they add, like, as, like, they need to rework, like, how you sort cards, like, when you're going to upgrade. And the fact that, like, I finally did the, like, newest, and that was, like, solving my, like, finding new cards I want to update. But then they dumped all of the custom background ones in the top of the newest, and I like can't find the cards I've been working on upgrading very, very easily. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't care about the custom borders. Like, I don't, I'm sorry. I know it's passion for a lot of people, but I don't care. Doesn't, and like, I just like want to update my newest variants, and like the one, particularly like when I get like the one I've been looking for, I just like upgrade it. And it's like harder now. And there's now this like 30 or 40, like absolutely useless, like I can choose the border cards for me that is like glumming up this the system that took me like my entire time playing Mavel Snap to develop, and now it's fucked up and I hate it. Like, and it actually made me like want to not upgrade cards, which is, for a while, which is like not what Marvel Snap wants. And so, yeah, how you upgrade cards, how you track upgrade cards is pretty bad. And they made it worse with what they did when they added new cards. So
yeah. I've yet to touch that, but I will like it once they say, like they said, it's coming, where like, if I have a gold, I don't know, I have a gold, of like Steampunk Bishop, and I have a hip that's not gold, I'll be able to just take my gold and slap it on the hip, and that will make me that will make me suddenly care.
That I will care more than when I don't have to like black and white that specific one.
Yeah. Right. And like, as long as I have any variant of that card, and then I can just like, I'm going to blow through credits like a maniac, because now it's just like, I just need one good split for every fucking card and I'm happy. And like, I don't care about Kirby Crackle. I just want gold or black and white for everything, depending on the thing. So like, cool. I'm in. Like, give me that thing, please.
The one thing I love about the custom cards is that I love inked variants. It gives you the 3D effect now if you use a custom card, even if it's just like inked. So I get to see those cards moving along with the other ones that I upgraded. That's the biggest thing that I enjoy about it so far.
Yeah. It, and I have like cool. my most split card is Sunspot. And so like, I do have a cool looking custom Sunspot, cause I just have, that's the one that I have. I think everything but gold for Sunspot, cause I just like, my RNG Jesus doesn't love me, but I have very cool black and white and other stuff effects for him. That bathtub Sunspot, like, I've upgraded that card so many times. Is that first
I got that gold and I stopped. It was, I don't remember if that came out first or Apocalypse came out first.
Yeah, there was definitely,
I feel Apocalypse. Like it was Apocalypse.
That's another one that's like one of my most upgraded cards, but I've been really
mine unlucky. Is just Shang.
That's fair.
Like, so many Shang splits.
I've been really like, I just do not have great splits for that Apocalypse, even though I've split him like a dozen times. So anyway, the woes of cosmetics. All right. So Snap Theory, if sideboard were implemented, how would you do it? Oh God.
Size, and this one is totally phrased as like, we have to
use in a match.
Implement a sideboard. Cause my answer would be, please don't. But if we have to, how do you do it?
All right, Newman, you can take the first swing at this one.
Yeah, I know a lot about this for sure. I'm just going to copy what someone else said, which was you make it three and then you let people do it in Conquest, probably only. And that's all that I could, like, I'm just going to throw Shang, Enchantress, and some like Eliath in there. And that's going to be it. Like, I don't even know.
This just destroys the game.
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, especially Conquest, like, it's going to be impossible. Deck trackers are going to be useless. They're just going to chuck Shang and Enchantress in after you figure out what your opponent's doing. And it's, yeah. So maybe don't do it. Marvel Snap. But if that's what everyone's going to do, or just make it one card, I don't know.
Yeah, that's my answer. Make it one card. And after, a Conquest game, that's it. One card Conquest game.
Enchantress. It's going to be Enchantress. The card is going to be Enchantress.
I mean, it might be Shang. It might be Killmonger. No, it depends on the meta.
Shang's in every deck. Like, Shang is like generically useful in like most Conquest games. Right, it's Enchantress. That's like,
well, but then the deck either Enchantress stops or, go away, right? Like,
and
it's stupid. I don't know. I don't want it.
I mean, the thing about sideboards, right? Like, sideboards are beautiful in games like Magic, and Magic's the game that with sideboard game that I played the most, right? Like, I think it's really beautiful because one, it's a 60 card format. It's a huge escape valve because it allows you to print like absolutely narrow answers that like, but when you do need them, they're so amazing to have, but like just would clunk up the game. They're like the, you know, and it allows you to be a really aggressive in card design in a 60 card format where like your number of like the quality of your cards is like diluted compared to Marvel Snap. Right. And you know, you got to fill your deck in with things. Right. And it's a really skill testing like thing. And there's a lot of really cool mind games that you can play when you have 15 cards that you can bring in. Like, and like, there's all these like sideboard where you can just like change the type of, basically change the whole deck. Like your deck starts off as a control deck and you pull all your control cards out and then you put in a bunch of like characters to, or, and it like changes the whole game. And you, and your opponent like, doesn't know like whether or not you're gonna do that. Like, I was playing this really cool deck in the standard season that played zero creatures and Magic Charm characters, right, in Marvel Snap, and in game one, and then brought in a bunch of them in my post-board games, at least one of my post-board games, and then my opponent, who took out all of their removal spells for characters usually, like, now I didn't have any answers, so I could play like a character on one, a character on two, and just like really pressuring them, and they were expecting to be playing against this like spell-based combo. And that was really fun, and then like for like my opponent was like, oh shit, and then they got to decide like how much removal they bring in for game three, how do I like go back to my game one plan, do I do a split? There's like lots of really questions, interesting questions for both of us. But Marvel Snap, because the decks are so small, and the answers are so polarized in the context of, you also, the biggest thing about Magic is you don't always draw your sideboard cards. But in Marvel Snap, you do. Like, not every game, but in many more games than you do in Magic. And like Shang-Chi, the dog, and Enchantress Cosmo. Took me a second to remember what Cosmo is called. Like, they're just so polarized. And like, Enchantress is the most evil of them. Like, In just a general Conquest meta, there's a cost to playing Rogue and playing Enchantress that in decks that don't have ongoings that are valuable getting rid of, you lose, like, because of that, and you risk your Conquest run. And that's a legitimate cost to against, like, playing against ongoing decks, particularly because, look, I know people hate Tribunal decks. But like, Tribunal decks just sometimes fart all over themselves because they're an ongoing deck, and like, they can get disrupted by locations, and they can get disrupted by just random nonsense, and just like allowing your opponent to just like nuke them from orbit with an Enchantress, just at no cost to them, is like just not fun. Like, I understand people like always will, like, just don't like it. Just the way Marvel Snap is designed, I just don't think sideboards are a good decision.
I mean, just fix Conquest. Either allow a loss or get rid of a layer of it so it's not so time consuming, and then we don't even have this conversation, right? If there's no silver Conquest, I don't think I actually give a shit about like sideboards and the complaints go away. Or if it's like win X in a row, but you can lose one in there.
Yeah.
Then the complaints go away. Like, just pick one, fix it, and then move on.
I think Infinity, you should be able to take a loss. Like, I think the other ones, you don't need to take a loss.
Yes, please.
Infinity,
and get rid of Silver. There's no reason for Silver. Apparently casuals don't play Conquest. Conquest has, like, no player base because, like, it takes so fucking long. Shorten it. Let people take a loss and shorten it. Make it friendly for people to play.
Yeah. I mean, Silver, like, so much of Conquest is meant to drain the currency out of you, right? Like, that's the goal so that, like, the people who love Conquest don't get to the Conquest rewards too fast for them, and then it becomes, mm-hmm. like, they don't want to leak value. That's what Conquest current design is like really second dinner favored to not really, even when I played a lot of Conquest over winter break, like it took forever because like I didn't quite have enough time to like really grind it, but I was enjoying playing it. So I was able to get some of the rewards, but not all of the rewards. And like, that is what they want. The median Conquest.
Yeah, but what happened is most people stopped fucking playing it.
Yeah, I
agree. So, like, that's fine, but, like, people still have to play the damn mode, and, like, they've made it a mode that's so unfriendly, even if the rewards are the best rate you can get, that most people would rather just see their little number go up on the infinite ladder, or down on the infinite ladder, whatever.
On the ladder.
Yeah.
I have not played Conquest in, like, 2 months. Since I got an Infinity Border, that's it. I didn't get the Gamora variant, and I'm going to try to get, what is it, Captain this month? Like, I'd love to get there.
It's ugly Captain America.
Is it?
Captain America. It's Phoenix Captain America.
I was a little sad. Was it? Ugh. Yeah, Gamora was really good, and then wasn't there an Iron Man recently that was really good?
Yeah, it was like Iron Man last season. It was fine.
That was sad. That was sad not to get, but whatever. Like,
yeah,
The Conquest shop is fucked, so.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. All right, whatever. What's the threshold of cards Snap needs to be able to consider a full deck pool formats versus limited, like limited in the amount of cards allowed formats, not limited like draft? So Marvel Snap basically rotation or ban list or like a modern versus whatever the opposite of modern is.
Do not make Glazer talk about Magic formats, friends. He does not know what he's talking about. Look,
you were talking about Magic for a while, and I was meant to like, bye. My brain was like, I'll be back.
But I was talking about Magic. In a way that you can understand.
Yeah, I understand.
You do not know what modern is, Aaron. Like, you just don't.
It's the most recent sets, isn't it? It's like most recent sets.
Yeah, he doesn't know, friends. Standard is the most recent sets.
Right? I don't know what the fuck modern is at all.
I know. Okay, it's easy.
I don't know anything.
Pretty easy to understand.
Please don't explain this to me.
I'm going to explain it to you. And I'm gonna, all right. Standard is the most recent sets that it rotates. Pioneer is some of the most recent sets and doesn't rotate, so as soon as something goes into it, it stays in it forever. Modern is similar to Pioneer, but it goes even further back. It's the most, it's sort of the modern Age of Magic's cards. It doesn't have the busted shit from when we were kids. And then Legacy and Vintage has all the busted shit from when we were children. So
cool. Good for that.
So all they're asking when rotation will be necessary to create a rotating and non-rotating format. To put it in Hearthstone terms, Wild versus Standard.
Right.
Yeah,
those
are still things I don't get. But
I get that one. I got it.
Okay.
No, I have no answer to this crap. I don't. I don't feel like they're going to get there because, like, Pool 1, they've talked about how they don't want to make too many big changes to that. So if they start removing cards from that, that's going to be an issue. And there's like a progression of cards or power or decks or whatever. Like it's well thought out within reason, I suppose. Like I think card acquisition. Let's not go that route. I think in general,
beginner card progression is well thought.
Right. Yeah. Totally. I don't think they'll do it. I think they'll just keep adding more. I don't have a cutoff of like how many cards are in Snap right now.
I have no 300. Guess. Like it's very few. Like 300. Okay. It's not a lot.
All right. Like, I don't know when we would get there to a point where it's like there's just too many cards. People just it leaves options open. That's kind of why I stopped playing Hearthstone because all my decks started disappearing because I don't have enough money to buy all the new packs every time a new like set comes out. So I'd be okay if they just left it, but I don't know. I know nothing.
Yeah, this is like an eventual problem. I don't think we're even close. At some point they're going to have to do this, but like we're so fucking far away from it. Like literally, I think like 3, 4, 5 years on the downside. I just don't care yet. I'm not against it. I like, again, I'm Mr. I love changes, right? So like, it wouldn't break my heart if they were just like, wee, more changes. But like, the changes should be more game modes. What's actually happening is that there's two game modes and like only the diehards play one of the two. So like, give us more game modes so more people play things, and then we don't really have to worry about that because different things will be good in different game modes.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I fundamentally agree with Glazer's point that so it took 2 years, right? Hearthstone came out in 2014. Standard was created in 2016. But Hearthstone does full sets. There's just like a ton more cards. There's also like heroes, which creates a whole like different, like sort of balancing them and creating like different experiences across all the different heroes. And a great way to do that is to constantly like change the card pool. So like you don't, and it does like theoretically help with power creep. But I just think, yeah, I agree with everyone that like Snap's card pool is too small really for that to be like really compelling. And card acquisition is so toxic that like if you start saying like my war machine is not playable anymore, right? But you don't agree that it's toxic?
Like, no, I was like, just saying
it was a Britney Spears song. It's okay.
It was so bad I didn't quite understand.
Newman got it immediately.
Newman got it, but anyway. That if you tell people like the earliest like Thanos and trying to think Thanos and Darkhawk are just like not playable on ladder anymore is like people would riot right now because there's like just not enough cards. You're spending a lot of money to get the few cards that there are, you know, and I think Newman's right that like Hearthstone and Magic has the like opposite problem of like keeping up with Standard is expensive. But keep up with Marvel Snap right now is expensive. To add the additional expense of you're triggering people's sunk cost fallacy is like not worth it for Snap right now. And they've also shown that they can like are basically aggressively willing to like create new cards out of old cards. So I think they're okay in that point. I think they I'm a believer that the draft that the pool, at least for me, like draft would not be very interesting in the card pool of this size. I know that's a controversial take among many Marvel Snap creators. Like, I just don't think there's enough cards for it to be interesting.
Play draft, it's very fun.
I understand
there's all the like third party draft things. It works very well.
Sure.
I don't know how you do it with the time thing and the pods, but yeah. Well, have you played it? Because like,
I'm just telling you, like experiences I seek, you can't get in the card pool. That's fine. But anyway, yeah. So let's talk about leaderboards or and how do you define success at Marvel Snap? Newman, how do you define success at Marvel Snap?
This is a very hippie-ish answer, I think.
Mine too.
I after getting an infinity border and hitting infinite every season since like the Guardian season, I just really want to have fun. And like if a deck is cooler, it gives me some sort of interesting thing to do, like War Machine and trying to Galactus at Professor X to lane. Like that's what I'm looking for at this point. If I wanted to play a busted thing, I would play, I don't know, Thanos probably. But I just want to enjoy myself and have some fun. And so if I end a season feeling like I have multiple times recently where it's like, this is boring. Like I'm just angry all the time. Like it didn't go well. So I think for me, it's just, did I have fun with this season? Did they ruin Sandman for the start of the next season? If not, then I'm good to go.
Yeah, I don't care. Define success however you want. I tend not to define success or failure based on video games. Like it's just not how I think about it. If success is to you hitting rank 40, go for it. If success for you is having a great time, go for it. If you need to hit top 10, that seems toxic, but hey, good luck. Whatever the hell makes you happy, man. Like, I'm not trying to live your life, and this video game should not be your life. I spend more time on Marvel Snap than fucking 99.9% of human beings on Earth, right? None of my success in life is tied to Marvel Snap in any way, shape, or form. None of my success in Marvel Snap matters, right? Like, sometimes I climbed 4,000 ranks the other day, and I was like, cool! And then I lost, like, 6,000 ranks. I was like, cool! Whatever. I got really annoyed. I was talking to somebody, and I lost 8 cubes because I did something stupid. And like 30 seconds later, I was like, oh man, I'm better. Sorry, I just needed like 30 seconds to be mad at myself. And like, it's just, I don't know, like, you got to maintain healthy relationships with things. Mm-hmm. How the fuck you do that? I don't know. I know how I do that in my brain. I don't know how you do that in other people's brains. In my brain, it's just like, recognize that you're going to die in every bit of time. You're mad at Marvel Snap is really not time well used before that happens. But like, that's just kind of where I fall. Like, and again, like, I will go find the best decks. I will like, I like learning things and doing things, but that's where my, the, like, to me, I guess that's success because that's where I find value. The value is that I had a really good time and that I learned something and that I thought about something and my brain got a little workout.
So I on a fundamental level, I agree with Newman and Glazer. I'm going to emphasize more the challenges, I guess, of this, because it's like really hard. It's like easy to say to yourself, you know, I'm going to make my success tailored to my expectations of what it is and find what I want. Like, it's, that is so easy to say. It's so easy to say to other people. As someone who does like coach students in a, like, an intellectual competitive pursuit, it's very easy to like talk the talk about finding success and you're always successful. And it's about learning. Like, even if you spend 8 hours playing Marvel Snap and you lose 4,000 ranks, you learned things, right? Like, and that's the healthiest, most results oriented like approach, but it's really hard for people to do that. And, you know, and there's times in my life, like not with Marvel Snap, but in other sort of card game outlets that I've been involved in, that I have had a less than healthy attitude towards like my own results and sort of being perceived. Cause that's also another thing that is like part of this in our social media. You know, Marvel Snap is big enough that it's like maybe less of a like toxic thing for people, but it can be, right? Like, where it's like, you want to be perceived as good. If you're spending a lot of time at Marvel Snap, a lot of people want to be perceived as good at this thing that they're spending time in, right? Particularly when it's in a public forum, of like Snap, right? Where you can point to, you know, Roy finished at 70, right? Last season. So that means there's 30 ranks before you even hit infinite before I'm anywhere near good, right? And then of course the infinite reimboard itself, right? Like, is seven, like, so I can immediately say I am worse. You can't see the scare quotes, but worse than the people who are between 70 and 100 and beyond. And, you know, some that could be hard if you like really put effort in to try to hit infinite and you didn't. Like, there's all these sort of things that are difficult to do and deal with. And like, the fact that people struggle with them, even on something as silly as Marvel Snap, is infinitely human. And it's okay to struggle with that, right? And that's a really important thing to like internalize, is it's like, it's okay to struggle with the fact that you have trouble identifying what is a healthy version of success for yourself. And the point of trying to find the health is that is actually the process you need to focus on, right? Not so much like being successful, but like putting the mental effort to like track your own feelings and see like what is becoming success and what is sustainable, right? And that is really important. And I think also to take lessons from when you overreach. That can be you overreach in the sense that like you destroy your life, like you cancel all of your plans and your partner breaks up with you because all you did for the month was play Marvel Snap.
I started streaming.
Yes, right. If Glazer started streaming, right? And like, you destroyed your life and, you know, but you hit top 10 on Infinite, right? And you're like, wait a minute, all my friends hate me. I don't have a romantic partner anymore. I'm almost fired from my job. Like saying like, okay, I was successful at Marvel Snap, but was that really success, right? And I lost all of these other things, right? Or like, hey, in a positive success, it's like, oh, hey, I completed the season pass. I got all 50 rewards. That's actually what my definition of a successful Marvel Snap season is at this point with me, is that if I consistently do that, then I get my $9.99 of value. And like, when I hit that, I feel good. It's like, oh yeah, I found the time to play enough Snap to do that. That's successful, because that created some feelings that made me feel good about what I was doing and that the time and money that I was investing was valuable, right? So it's, you've got to track your own feelings and make sure that you are not chasing short-term success highs at the sacrifice to other aspects of your life and for long-term success, right? That is another big thing to keep in mind. And these are all lessons that you can take to other outlets in your life. But I think specifically of dealing with Snap and other sort of competitive endeavors, that is my long-winded answer.
So a thing, like, and I'm sure Newman can relate to this, that happened recently, is I wrote this article about Thanos and how I thought Thanos had to go. Right? Like, I think Thanos has to go for the good of the game. I think it's going to keep being broken. It's a whole article. It's on Snap Zone. Terrence, lovely Terrence, hi T, decided to post it on Reddit. So a bunch of people showed up on Marvel Snap Zone who have no idea who I am. I'm not Cozy, right? Like, and they're just like, the fuck do you know? And then the Marvel Snap Zone regular writers are like fighting in the comments like, no, 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 he knows the game. Like, I'm just like, guys, chill. We can disagree. Like, maybe I don't fucking know anything. Maybe Thanos is perfect for the game. What the fuck? Like, at the end of the day, like, even if you're Lambie, right? Like, now the Italians are at the top of the Infinite Leaderboard. You can find a way to feel bad. You can always find a way to feel bad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I can. I can definitely live. I can.
Very true.
Saren scientifically proved that you can definitely find ways to feel bad.
So, but if that's true, then you can not always, but usually find a way to feel good too. So you're going to have to choose where to put your mental effort.
And I actually really want to emphasize something Glacier said, unless you want to say something, Newman.
No, I thought that was well put. I think that the tilt that comes with this game is a little bit obnoxious. Because we're playing a card game against other people. We shouldn't be getting angry about having fun, but it does tend to happen. And I don't know where it comes from, but the number of people that are like, I just couldn't hit infinite. It's okay. It's all good. Are you having fun? If not, dang it. You should probably stop for a little bit. I don't know.
There are other games, I promise.
Yeah.
Okay,
there
are other, go do.
Lies of P. Go play that.
Playing
Unicorn Overlord
or Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
I stopped at the final boss.
Oh, heck yeah.
I wanted to end.
Glazer is way, way, way ahead of me. So I'm about to beat the elves. But anyway.
Oh, wow. You're way behind me.
I told you at the beginning of this, I worked 13 of the last 15 days, man. Like, and we're not talking about like 6-hour days. We're talking about like 15-hour days. Like, I'm not going to come home and play video games.
Miserable.
Anyway.
You need a union. All right. Let's keep going.
All right. Anyway. I want to emphasize something that's, like, I think specifically about, like, game culture is, like, to have, like, one of the hardest things to figure out, and I think games accentuate this, is when, like, expertise is really important. I said this both as a teacher and someone who's spent years in graduate school, right? Expertise is important. You should listen to experts, but it's also okay to develop your own opinion, and you need to healthily, like, look at the arguments that people are making, right? Like, you know, Glazer and Lambie are both very invested Marvel Snap people, but they have different strengths, different weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And just because Lambie is one of the best players who's ever lived doesn't mean he's always right about, right? And Glazer is Glazer, and that definitely doesn't mean that he's always right, right? And I think you need to look at the arguments and the expertise and think holistically about this, right? And one of the drives that drives people to get really toxic about leaderboards is, like, I can't have an opinion on Marvel Snap until I hit Infinite. Well, spoiler alert, I've hit Infinite once, and I have plenty of fucking opinions about this game, and I had even stronger opinions before, right? And, like, it's okay. Yes, someone who's been playing Marvel Snap for 2 days, you don't need to listen to them as much as you listen to Lambie. And you definitely shouldn't listen to me as much as you listen to Lambie. But there are definitely, people have arguments, and you should view the arguments alongside their expertise, right? And that being convinced by something requires a holistic approach, right? And again, expertise is important, but also, like, the arguments that people are making. And that's also, like, how knowledge grows, right? People become experts by making arguments, getting the pushback, and then refining and sharpening that arguments with evidence and discourse and all that beautiful things. That's the healthier way to do it. But in gaming culture, and specifically, this gets really toxic, and it's just important to just, like, chill about that stuff and look at people's arguments alongside their expertise. So TLDR, Glazer knows more than your average Redditor about Snap, so you should definitely listen to him.
Oh, it's the first time I've ever been right on this podcast. All right, work life. Hey, Newman, how do you juggle being a parent to a newborn and being a content creator? How do you keep work-life balance?
All right. So I don't make that much money. So this is still definitely like a hobby for me. But I get up every mm-hmm. morning at 4:30. I go to bed probably between nine and 10. Everything I do for YouTube is before school. And then when I go home, I'm not doing anything else. I make everything probably over the course of an hour and a half, either for the day or the next day. And that's it. And then I stream on Saturday mornings at 7 MST in the morning because I want to hang out with my family. So it's I take the time that they're sleeping and stuff like that to make content and do YouTube stuff.
I schedule the shit out of everything. My day is like extremely regimented at this point as far as what I do when, because otherwise things don't get done. And if you've been watching this stuff or listening for any amount of time, you know that I get basically everything done every day, right? So like it is that happens because like I know exactly what I'm doing when. Like I literally have like a 5-minute spot between two periods where I know kids don't visit me, then I know I can do a quick deck check on Twitter. Right? Like it is extremely regimented, and because it's extremely regimented, I get it done. And I do have obviously downtime, and like I don't have alone time, but I have downtime.
I mean, otherwise Glazer wouldn't have almost beaten Unicorn Overlord. So he has definitely has to have.
So vacation in Dominican Republic plus staying up really late and then waking up super early. All right, anything?
And I'm not. Yeah, I don't even have a kid. So.
I don't sleep a lot anymore, which is Jesus. Thing. I take naps, but I
absolutely.
I cannot.
I just got old, and like now I just like naturally wake up earlier than I used to and sleep less. It's not my favorite thing. I really love sleep. Look, if I could go back to sleeping the way I would, buy Snap content. All right. Anything you'd like to let your kidless friends and viewers know, Newman?
There's so many things I could say. The main thing is that eventually, if you have kids, other people are going to have so much advice for you on what to do. Don't listen to anybody else's advice. So basically don't listen to this question, I guess, but like don't other people's advice. They have their own kids. Kids are all different. They all look kind of similar and they're squishy and alien like, but they're all their own person. And so your experience raising kids is going to be very different than someone else's. So just go into it knowing that you know nothing and be okay with that and just enjoy. It's quite a ride.
Mine is understand that parents are busy in a different way. And like, that is not like meant as an insult. I'm not saying single people or people without kids cannot be extremely busy. I'm saying that being a parent is busy in a different way where literally everything you do becomes a give and take as far as time, effort, energy, attention. And like keeping that organized and straight is extraordinarily and consistently stressful. And you're not always going to succeed. Give yourself grace in that lack of success. That's where success really fucking matters, just for the record. But like, you're not always going to succeed in finding that balance. You're not always going to have the exact amount of patience you want. You're not always going to be as attentive as you want. You're not always going to be as calm as you want. And like, hey, that's all fair. You've still got the full-time like life thing going like before. And now you've got this too. And this too is like suddenly more important than all the rest, but doesn't give you any more hours in the day. So like chill out because it's going to be a long ride.
Yeah.
Yes.
It'll hopefully be the rest of your life. So
it is. Well, that is brought on by someone being like, I don't like someone was like, hey, don't rush about this. And I was like, dude, don't tell me not to rush. And like, it wasn't like meant rudely. I don't think. I don't actually know for sure. But like, don't tell me not to rush. You don't know what I'm giving up to do this right now. Right? Like, like you might have hours after work to do X, Y, and Z, right? But I've got homework to help with. And like, I need this answer now, because if I don't get this answer now, I'm not sleeping for like an extra 4 hours. And like that, like, it's just, you might not give a shit. You might think that like, this is no big deal and you can chill. But you're not in my shoes. And like, in general, we should try and put each other in each other's shoes, right? But like, especially once you have kids, like, please calm down. You don't understand. You just don't. Like, I didn't.
It's really hard to conceptualize how big of a life change having kids is. You know it's going to change some things, but it changes literally every part of your life, period. Sleep. My kid woke me up at 4 this morning by kicking me in the nuts. That's just how it goes now. Like, I don't sleep because he was moving too much. Okay, I guess it's time to get up. Everything is different, and it's wonderful and horrifying at the same time.
And you have to figure out how to balance, like, being really frustrated and angry and not being really frustrated and angry at them. And then, like, God, you'll do like, and then the next that like, and what like what kills me about the Marvel Snap content thing is like, then I'll do a video and like half my audio is gone, and I'm like, all right, like can't throw my computer through a wall right now, like all right, and like you just stop, you take the deep breath, you know, wish you smoked weed, don't smoke weed, very sad, wish you smoked weed and fucking get right back to it, and like it's just you know. There's a lot of, as Roy's favorite thing, shrugging going on. We're just like, all right, fucking let's go then. There's no answer except let's do some more work. So let's do some more work. As a fundamentally lazy person, not my favorite thing.
Lots of truth bombs there, but Glazer being a fundamentally lazy person is not one of them, but.
I think all right. Favorite thing. A lot of how I get things done is I want to do things with as little work as possible. So I like build myself heuristics and shortcuts that like make it easier.
Yeah, right, it's true.
Favorite things to teach: books, concepts, or ideas. Since we all teach different things.
It's true.
Yeah, I got this. This is so I'm a special education teacher in high school. So I do a little bit different type of stuff. thank you. So I don't teach normal content. I teach skills. and that's basically what my class is. I tell students, my class is the most boring class you're ever going to have because I'm going to make you work on math if you hate math and reading if you hate reading. Like all those things, that's what you get to do with me. But every year I have a research project for students that is focused on researching their own area of disability or exceptionality, whatever wording you want. Because my goal is for them to be prepared for me to not be there. Like, after they graduate, whatever it is. And so I want them to know as much about themselves and know that like if they have ADHD, there are certain things that just kind of come with that. It's not an excuse. It's helping them understand why they're struggling. They still have to do the stuff. They still have to do homework and stay focused and not talk all class long. But understanding that there's a reason for it and there are ways of working with it is important to me to impart to them, especially as a dude with ADHD. So that's like my favorite thing for students in general is I want you to learn about yourself so that you can advocate for yourself and not beat yourself up forever for thinking you're just Glazer, you know, like a lazy person. That's not what it is.
I don't care that I am. I just
I know. You just said lazy in the last one, and that's where I was going with it. So that's my favorite.
So my favorite thing I teach every year is this unit that I made up. It's called the Nothing Unit. We read a few essays together about things that are fundamentally nothing. Hummingbirds, moths, whatever. And they're ultimately, as everything is, really about life and death and everything in between. And it's just the question I like to ask kids is fundamentally, why do you care? What do you care about? Why don't you care? Why do you care? Kids can tell you what they care about, what they don't care about very clearly, but they have almost no conception of why. And what I'm trying to get my kids to ask and really think about is, hey, why do you care? And when you don't care, could you care? Could you conceptualize the idea of caring? How do you manage empathy even when you don't naturally feel it yourself? Which is, I think, an important mental exercise, because without that, you spend a lot of life genuinely upset and angry and frustrated. And like, this all ties back to our last conversation, right? But like, it's a lot of like being metacognitive so that you're aware that like, yes, this may suck, be boring, but it's about life and being alive and why and how we care about things, which to me is the fundamental like tenet. Helping others and caring are the fundamental tenets of life.
Well, one of the advantages of being an IB history teacher is I get to like pick what I teach mostly.
Me too.
And so that helps. So most of the things I teach are my favorite things to teach. We do a really awesome unit that almost every IB school in the world does, which it compares and contrasts the American Civil Rights Movement with the South African Civil Rights Movement. Mm-hmm. And that is like one of my favorite units to teach. I kind of expand it more than the IB would really want us to. We take the story forward in time for the United States into the 1980s and South Africa into the 1990s, so they can learn like how apartheid ended, and like the struggles, and then also like how the civil like the strengths and weaknesses of like the sort of post civil rights outcome for Black Americans and other racial and ethnic minorities and queer people and other folks who are traditionally marginalized. And so it's a high engagement unit to use the teacher administrative friendly phase. The main thing I like love about teaching history and like why I do it is like giving folks the content knowledge to contextualize their own life stories and to sort of like understand themselves, their positionality, and sort of their communities. Because I think fundamentally, if you want to change your life and you want to change the sort of status of your community in the world, you need to be able to contextualize it. You need to be able to understand like how we as a society, America, in the case of me, my country, got to be where it is, how your specific community got to be where it is. That could be, when I say community, it could be an ethnic community, it could be a racial community, it could be a city, Washington, D.C., it could be a state, Virginia, which is what I spent my academic career learning about. But just being able to contextualize yourself is like such a powerful and in many ways liberating thing. At least it has been for me and for a lot of people I've worked with, is sort of like really allowing you to think through sort of the problems of being a human. And I think history is just such a critical part of that. So that's sort of like what I enjoy teaching and why I enjoy teaching history to high schoolers.
All right. Some quick hitters just to finish us off. Sports. What do you follow? Who are your teams?
Nothing. But I watch football. Like sometimes I watch football because I went to high school with Kirk Cousins. And so I rooted for the Vikings for the last forever. And now he just got traded to the Falcons. So I guess I'm going for the Falcons, but I really don't. Sorry. I don't have I don't know anything. I knew the Vikings weren't that great, but they were okay. And the Falcons, I don't know if they're good at all. I just know that Kirk Cousins is there. So I really don't have time like or TV. So I can't watch like anything. Don't pay for YouTube or anything like that. So, yeah, it's all good.
I was a baseball, basketball, and football fan growing up. They tore down Yankee Stadium and they didn't tear down Fenway. So I realized I couldn't root for the Yankees anymore because Boston did it better. And that was the end of that. And I slowly fell in love with baseball. And I basically almost never watch baseball. I go to like a game a year. I actively root against the Yankees because that shopping mall is a fucking crime against humanity. I was a Packer fan my whole life. My dad is a huge Packer fan. One Sunday I was watching football and thinking about things and I realized I was not enjoying myself and I stopped and reflected and went, do I actually like football? Nope. Nope. I do not. I don't really understand what the fuck I'm seeing. I understand on a real surface level, but that's not the way I really like to get things right. Like, I don't know what play people are running or like the difference between like an outside and inside linebacker isn't something that makes a whole ton of sense to me. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing with my Sundays? Like, I can get drunk without activities. Thank you very much. So I proceeded to do so. I absolutely love basketball. I can't root for the James Dolan Knicks. So I'm really rooting for him to sell the team because I love the Knicks deeply. I love basketball deeply and will watch basically any game you put in front of me that is NBA. I don't know why I cannot get into college as a general rule. I would like to get into the WNBA, but like I don't have time to watch the NBA. So like I certainly don't have time to watch the WNBA, but I really do love basketball. I think basketball is glorious. And as far as like literally any other sport goes, I root for Colombia when the World Cup and Olympics come around because it means an awful lot to them. And my wife is Colombian. And I like when people really care about things and then things go well. That's why I don't root for America. People are like, but you're American. You root for America. Like, if fucking America wins the World Cup, people just wave stupid flags, right? Like, no one really cares. Their, like, identity isn't impacted. If Colombia wins the fucking World Cup, like, they're in, like, which has not happened, they will be in, like, utter, crazy, stupid heaven, right? Like, it, like, the sheer euphoria is not something an American can understand. Like, it's something the Red Sox could understand after, like, the 80-year bullshit, right? But, like, it's not something, like, a regular American understand about America winning a World Cup in soccer. And if we don't care, then we shouldn't fucking win, and I don't care if that makes people sad.
Over the last few years, I've made a concerted effort to understand and be able to follow basketball because it's very important to many of my students, and making the effort to like understand it has improved my relationships with them. And it's combined with my wife and I left Philadelphia and we returned to the DMV. And a great way to stay connected to a place that means a lot and people that mean a lot to me is by following Philadelphia sports, primarily the 76ers. I've come to really love that team. Also, they have, as someone who studies the American Revolution, like the fact that they're called the Sixers is like just and brings me endless joy. Their fight song is amazing. But just like also the Eagles as well, because it's like I was in Philadelphia when the Eagles won their Super Bowl. And just like it just showed you the power of sort of sports, sort of the kind of thing that Glazer was talking about, Colombia and other sort of countries that like the World Cup really matters to. Like it mattered a lot to Philadelphia when they won that. We got 3 days off work when they won the Super Bowl. So that's kind of thing. So it's Philadelphia sports, particularly. Not so happy this season to be the biggest 76ers fan, but, you know, maybe since Joel Embiid was injured in the regular season, he won't be injured in the postseason. We'll see. But, yeah.
All right. Did y'all watch X-Men 97?
No, I'm rewatching the old series before I get to that one, but I'm really excited to get there. I just feel like I need to rewatch.
So watch a YouTube video that catches you up, because X-Men 97 is fucking phenomenal. Roy, did you watch yet?
I haven't had the time, man.
Oh, man. It's so good. It's like, it's easily the best X-Men cartoon ever, and it's 3 fucking episodes in. I won't say any more, but like, hey, if you can watch that, watch it. And if you're watching this video and want to talk about it in the comments, I am in. Let's go.
Okay. Glazer, I would rather play Unicorn Overlord, and that's, I only have time for one of those two things to do. And I mean, budgeted my time for, you know,
if I had two children, you would just be asking me to choose between them.
Mm.
Variant of the week in honor of Fathor Newman. We have Skin Thor Newman. Thor.
Dude.
So you two picked the same one. So I'm going first. I think that anyone who did not pick Throg is wrong. The humongous Throg stan. Title is for me and about me. Throg is amazing, even though it's a totally different character, except for that one time Thor was turned into a frog. There is now just a frog Thor. Also, I don't give a shit. He's Frog and he's Thor and his name is Throg. Like, what the fuck more? I'm not a complicated man, obviously. This is what I want from my life. All right, why did you two choose Hellfire Gala?
Because he looks like me. He was crafted after my likeness. Therefore,
that's what you look like shirtless.
Totally. Yep.
Do you wear one leg out?
I got lots of pecs, man. Like at least two of them. So I look real good. I got a flowing blonde hair. It's just me. So love it.
I think that the thing about the Hellfire look is I think it combines like kind of like all the eras of Thor into like one image. Right, it's both like a very specific moment in time of Thor, but also like oddly timeless in the sense of like it's just like very like striking and like stands out. Like when I think about Thor in Marvel Snap, like this card pops out. I don't know why. Like I don't, but it's not like my favorite cover or anything like that. But that's just sort of it.
The avatar for this is also my only Infinity Conquest avatar as well. So I have a personal connection in a variety of ways to it.
All right. Please remember to follow Fathor Newman. Why should our friends follow you, Newman?
I don't know. No, I have a lot of fun. I view myself as not a fantastic Marvel Snap creator. I believe I've grown a lot over the years of playing it. And I'm having a great frickin' time. But my main thing for me is I go on, I want to have fun. I try out new decks and I don't cut things up or whatever. I play for 30 or 40 minutes and you get what you get. So if I lose, that's the video and it kind of sucks for retention. But also sometimes decks are harder to learn than others. And I like that feel for my videos. I talk about kids and parenting and just whatever random crap pops in my brain in the morning. So if you have ADD, I'm a great person to watch. We're gonna have a lot of fun together. But when is this supposed to come out? What date?
Could easily come out the night we're recording it. I'm gonna move into turning it into a YouTube video. Literally,
so if this comes out on Saturday, please go over to Devilish on Twitter. Go to Devilish. I love that man. But there is a poll on Twitter where you can vote for names of two teams, the Mysterios and Keeping Up Snappearances. Please vote Keeping Up Snappearances. That's my team for the Snapprentice. I would really, really appreciate it.
It's also, you have until it's also Wednesday. Got Lauren Whatevs and Doc D on the same team. So like,
I like those people. STG, but the name is the mysterious.
Terry Manilow, Brazifer. Like,
oh really? I like all those people. All right, yeah. All right, hey. So you should follow Newman because you know how we were talking all that about like trying to keep a healthy balance with the game. If you want to learn how to do that, see that in action, model it after how Newman does it. He literally models it for you every day. You will have a healthier, happier relationship with Marvel Snap. Go check it out. YouTube.com/@FothorNewman.
Thanks.
All right.
Absolutely.
Time for my favorite part of every episode.
Certain tiers of support on our Patreon come with honor. Thanks. We've got Abigail Kiesel, Manager Burnout Cables, David G. Wingfield, Direwolf LAB, Fothor Newman, Hey Newman, Good Dog Gamer Inc., Jane Everett, Jane McDonald, Caretix Lee, Koire, KCH, Doku, Philip Ratkovich, Haplo, Kenny Loggins, Rob Silverman, Juan Diego Lebed, The Bizard, X-Force V, Skippy G, Tommy Nyquist, Black Dahlia, The Great Kazoo, Jessica Gamble, Ryan Wood, Models, Louis Antunes, Matt H., Mikey Hijik, Snowflex, Ocularius, Craig Sterry, Pretty Chill, Seamus, Spike Jones, Two Ties, The Pirate King Tucker, The Homie Minute, and of course, Gunny Tournament.
Awesome, awesome. If you need a quick reminder it was very impressive, how to engage with us on social media, our Twitter/X handle is @SnapDudgeCast. We are, of course, proud to be the official podcast of Marvel Snap Zone. Please join their Discord. Link is in the show notes of this episode and in the description in YouTube and the Friendly Neighborhood Podcatcher. Our email is snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're @SnapJudgmentsPod. And finally, our Patreon is patreon.com/snapjudgments. All right, friends, that brings us to the end of another episode of Snap Judgments. Fothor Newman, thank you so much for joining us today for this episode.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. This was fun. Appreciate you guys.
Glazer, it is a pleasure each and every week to record this episode with you, even. And in the first time in the history of Snap Judgments, as you are actually trying to rush us to finish the episode. So maybe in revenge, I should keep talking. But no, I'll stop. Aaron, thank you so much for recording this episode with me.
Peace and love, everybody.
All right, friends. Stay safe, make good choices, and keep on snapping.